Today on My First Concert.
And it's just the full throttle London Calling and, you know, Rudy Can't Fail and all of the things that come off. And he's just drenching us. And we're standing there. It's like, this is a shower. And we couldn't have been happier. We couldn't have been happier. He was just...
Welcome back. Dave here with a couple of concert veterans. Jay Daly, a Rush savant, by the way, and Peter Johns, who worked many years helping book shows and worked with some of the bands in the arena atmosphere. This is all sponsored by UCare, Aquarius Home Services, Star Bank, and Propane Association. We'll tell you more about all those folks in a little while. It's all recorded right here in the Aquarius Home Services studio. So thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton, for being with us today as well. All right, Jay, let me start with you. First of all, great to talk to you again. It's been a little while, but what was your first concert?
Great to be with you. Thank you for having me, Dave. It's wonderful to be with you and Peter this morning. 1983 Rush Signals tour in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the old Mecca, which was, I think I was just turned 13 and my parents escorted me and a buddy over and then they patiently waited across the street. At a hotel and waited for us, you know, to make sure we weren't killed or anything like that. So it was one of those moments where I think watching a couple of 13-year-old goofballs walk across with, you know, adults with, you know, black t-shirts and all that. It was one of those moments you kind of went, oh God, here he goes.
Well, here, this is fascinating to me because you're 13, you're watching a band that, other bands, I mean, Hall of Famers, legendary bands like Metallica have credited Rush with being an influence. The Foo Fighters, the Pixies, the Smashing Pumpkins, no doubt. And here you are, 13 years old, Jay. What in the world was it about Rush at that age that you wanted to hear or see?
You know, that's a great question. I was thinking about that. And my best friend who I went to the show with, he had an older brother. And when we were about 7 or 8, we heard Kiss for the first time.
And oh, yeah.
He and I would just, you know, as an 8, 9-year-old, you can imagine the influence that kind of had on us. But his brother was about 7 or 8 years older, was in a band, and I'll never forget the first time I heard that opening riff of Tom Sawyer. It was like, what is that? And for both me and Tim, it completely changed everything for us, and we could not get enough of Moving Pictures. And you know, as we kind of digested that, we'd go deeper and deeper, you know, into Rush. And so it was Andrew Cronquist who's unknowingly left an album out that we just put on, and like I said, it kind of changed my life.
Well, it's pretty heavy. Rush, your first concert, and then a huge Rush fan after that. Now, Peter Johns, you've worked with many bands, many shows. Peter, I'm anxious to hear what your first concert was.
Sure, yeah. It's a two-part answer, Dave. The very first concert, I've got a twin brother. My dad took us in the early 70s to a Sonny and Cher concert in Southern Illinois at the field house at the university campus there. And I don't remember a whole lot about it other than just the raw excitement. And that was the hook, was just the raw excitement of going to see something that, you know, you saw on television or heard on the radio. And that was the thrill of it. And being, you know, I remember vaguely we had pretty decent seats. But the very first concert that had any real major impact is, like Jay, you know, thank God for best friends. He, my friend Jeff had found a pair of general admission tickets to The Clash, and they were just getting ready for, it was an early leg of the Combat Rock Tour. And all the albums previously, and we were, you know, London Calling was an anthem and everything for us, and he found these tickets. And it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. It changed everything as far as direction and where we wanted to go. We had managed to work ourselves into the St. Paul Civic Center, as Norm Coleman once called the greatest testament to East German architecture in America. And it's quite a building. But we found our way down, and we got all the way up against the barricade, up against the stage, and we're smashed in there. And from what I remember, it was a sold out show. And just the raw excitement of music that spoke to who we were and what we thought about the world and what we thought about music. And to be standing right there, and literally maybe 4 or 5 feet from me was Joe Strummer's feet. And he had that Telecaster, and he's got, you know, Ignore Alien Orders. He has that sticker on it. And that was in 100 pictures that we'd seen before. And he's right there. And I will tell you this, when Joe Strummer, you know, the late great, when he sang, I think there was probably half a liter of spit that came out of his mouth at every single possibility. And he's pouring sweat. And it's just the full throttle London Calling and, you know, Rudy Can't Fail and all of the things that come off. And he's just drenching us. And we're standing there. It's like, this is a shower. And we couldn't have been happier. We couldn't have been happier. He was just absolutely full throttle. I was like, this guy is unbelievable. You know, is he going to need water? Because this won't stop. And he's drenched, and we're all just thrilled. And it's just one after another. It was just one thunder roar, a track after another. And it was all energy. And then finally, I think we got all the way to the end of the show. And we're smashed up against there, and then they did Train in Vain as kind of one of the closers, and that was sort of the hidden track on London Calling. It wasn't credited on the album, and so those that knew, that was the song to go with. So and Dave and Jay can speak to this as well. That infusion of fury, sound, art, music, you know, certain political beliefs, and just something that actually spoke to you as a human being, it never went away. And I just remember thinking, I have to work in this business. I don't know how, but I have to work in this business.
And you did. And isn't it interesting, though, that your recollection is that sharp from back then?
Yeah, at the time, I had some concert enhancements that took a while to bring clarity, but in retrospect, it did come into focus after a few years, Dave.
I'm talking with Peter and Jay, a couple of rock and roll savants, as I mentioned. We got much more to talk about here on My First Concert. I want to thank our sponsors, and it's great to be in the Aquarius Home Studios recording this for you today. And I want to mention them because as long as we're talking about them, I'm sure you're like me and just waiting for the green grass to show up. But as we record this, we have plenty of snow. And with the winter finally winding down at some point here soon, we know spring is on the way. One thing we know for sure is all of our furnaces have been working really hard. So the good news, the warm weather will come. That's exactly why I love the folks at Aquarius, because what they do is keep our furnace and, by the way, our air conditioners, can't wait till that is up and running, but they keep them in top-notch condition so they run for a long time. And for a limited time, Aquarius is offering $98 off any heating or cooling repair. So that's still in progress right now here in March. Schedule your appointment today. And that's simple at AquariusHomeServices.com. And then as you start thinking about your cabin, I want you to have the best water you can. And they have the Kinetico systems there. I know that because I've had mine for over 2 decades minimum. Okay, it's been a lot of years. And it is worry-free, but I'm telling you, you want the good water out at that lake place or at your home, wherever you're at. Check that out because they'll come over for free and test your water, too. So all sorts of great things at Aquarius Home Services. Reach out to them at AquariusHomeServices.com. I'm talking with Jay Daly. I'm talking with Peter Johns, Dave Lee here. Brandon's busy running the shop for us, and we appreciate him being here today. Okay, Jay, let me go back to, you know, Peter mentioned the songs, the Clash songs that stuck with him. I want to go back to Rush for a minute. Is there a certain Rush song that kind of stands out for you in the concerts you've seen?
Gosh, I don't know if there's one. You know, I obviously, you know, Tom Sawyer is the eponymous song. But to me, I think, you know, Limelight, I was a huge fan of Signals. I think it's like the one understated album, you know, it was the album after Moving Pictures, and this, some of the music on that to me is my favorite. But, you know, to me, it was for them, at least in concert, it was the show that went on with the music. They were, you know, obviously famous for some stage shows and the lights and the screens. And I think their sense of humor, the thing I always liked about them is they never really took themselves terribly serious. And so when you went to the shows, you know, the videos that would play between songs and that were funny, but, you know, there were those certain songs, you know, when you'd hear that opening riff of Limelight, man, the place would go crazy. And, you know, when you'd hear, you know, the beginning of the 2112 Overture, it just, you know, again, some of those songs were that just showcased their musicianship. I mean, I think those were the things when you would just see how terrific, you know, I know that like Geddy Lee's voice is one of those things that you either love it or you hate it. And for the people that hate it, they really hate it. but to see these guys play and to just see the proficiency of how they played their instruments. And I mean, it was just perfection to watch these guys. And, you know, that to me, it was just the experience of just sitting there watching, you know, Geddy's fingers on that bass or just the concentration of Neil Peart playing these crazy riffs, you know, and then, you know, Alex just seamlessly kind of in there, never overstated, but just this unbelievable guitar player. You know, he wasn't the showy Eddie Van Halen but his role in that band, and you listen to Geddy, and, you know, it was just, to me, it opened my ears up to so much other music and appreciating just the effort and the professionalism that a lot of these musicians, you know, have. So I think that's where, but I don't, you know, I love the whole experience.
Speaking of that, I'll ask you first, Jay, and then Peter, I'm going to ask you. Opening acts. Sometimes I feel bad for opening acts in front of legends like Rush, for example, or you got the Clash. Man, who's going to be the opening act? Did, when you saw them in concert, did you go for the opening acts, or did you show up just when Rush played?
No, I for me, I did. I don't recall. I remember Primus on one tour, Les Claypool, and for the I mean, there's Rush on Ecstasy. I mean, Les Claypool, it's a 3-man band. Les Claypool may be the most crazy bass player of all time. I do remember Marillion, for whatever reason. They were the opening act, the first show. And it was a progressive band out of England that, you know, I think just I was taking everything in that first show. But those are the only two I remember for Rush. And just like being gobsmacked at watching Les Claypool play the bass. So,
well, speaking of gobsmack, the first time I saw them in person, I went early. I wasn't expecting to because Metallica was a headliner, but Godsmack opened up. And ever since that time, I've become a big fan of theirs. Peter, let me go to you because you booked a lot of these shows. You worked with some of the artists.
Sure.
The opening act issue. Did you go to opening act bands or did you wait for the main one to show up? And what about booking an opening act? Did you ever have to get involved in that?
Yeah, the whole concept, you know, the job of the opening act is to, you know, warm the crowd, get them accustomed to what's about to come. And then it's exposure. And you're not going to get a lot of artists that would be able to pair with a headliner. And so, you know, it's working, it's getting their chops, it's stage time, Dave's craftsmanship and all that kind of stuff. And there's not an opening act in the world that doesn't know that 80% of the people are standing around, you know, talking about the mileage they get on their car, waiting for the main act. And these guys are pouring their lives into it. And they know that, and that's part of the understanding of it. And so when, you know, whether local shows or whatever, we got hooked in when we were producing like the Edge Fest and the big festival stuff, it's understood. It's like, hey, listen, you know what, this is just an opportunity. You don't even have a single right now. But for whatever reason, we feel compelled to bring you on board here. Does this work for you? And for the most part, it does, because a lot of these opening acts are used to playing to maybe 200, 300, 400 people. And then, hey, here's a chance to be on stage at an 18, 20, 30,000 seat event and hone your skill, because it's a lot different bouncing around at First Avenue than it is, you know, going out in front of a 30-acre amphitheater. And so it gives them a chance to practice their skills. But yeah, I always went. Part of it was sympathy. I just, you know, it's like, well, these guys are trying, you know, and I want to see what, you know, what they bring. And every once in a while, it's absolutely fantastic. Like Interpol, when they opened up, if you remember when U2 played TCF Stadium, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure do. Was there? Yep.
Yep. And that's not an act that you're going to see on a massive stage. And I'm a big fan, and I wanted to see, you know, geez, what can these guys do? Because their stuff is kind of dark and broody and atmospheric at times. You know, how does that translate in a stadium setting?
You know, Peter, I was going to say, to me, and looking back at other concerts, you know, those opening acts, I can go back now and think of, you know, bands that I saw open for other bands that ended up becoming bigger. I remember going to see Big Head Todd and the Monsters in Chicago. Yes. In the early 90s. And we got there, we saw them at the Aragon Ballroom, and we got there early, and this band called Dave Matthews was opening for them, you know, and like, I don't know who these guys are. And here, you know, 5-6 guys jump up on stage, and people's jaws kind of dropped, because, you know, it was right before their first song, What Would You Say? And just, you know, like, wow. So, you know, I kind of think about some of those bands that, you know, let's get there early. You never know what you may see. It may be the next super group. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, I think, and Peter, I don't know if you were working for at the XL at the time, but I remember Taylor Swift brought out Ed Sheeran, and I don't know if anybody knew who he was at the time. I'm not sure.
No, I wasn't there at the time, but I remember that coming out, and it was a blow away. And from an artist's point of view, sometimes, you know, a headliner's got to be careful. Either they're like, hey, I'm going to champion this artist all the way to the top, or I've just booked my replacement.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
yeah. You know, so they have a whole lot of stuff. But I remember, you mentioned Taylor. Randy Levy's kind of a legendary, you know, indie promoter. Yeah. for decades in the
Wasn't
upper
he the
Midwest.
WeFest guy?
Absolutely. Yeah. And owned, you know, created, built, and I think subsequently sold that after a few decades. But I remember him telling me about this 17-year-old girl out of Nashville, and she was doing a showcase event. And I can't remember the name of the country. It was a music country club on outside the Twin Cities, like as you're headed in on 94 East. And I can't remember the name of it, but she was doing a showcase there, a label showcase, opening up for, you know, Billy Horseshoe and the Belt Buckles, whoever was there at the time. And she was just like, you've got to see this. He's like, you've got to see this. And that's what happens in that industry as well, as you develop these relationships. She was 17 at the time, but it's like, hey, you know, we're going to take a chance on her. And the next thing you know, it's WeFest, it's Excel, it's stadiums, it's global. And so that's part of the tag in this whole thing.
Yeah, that's it's interesting. And we may have seen some that we don't even remember, but I do remember meeting and talking and listening to Chris Stapleton before he was, I've talked about it before he was Chris Stapleton singing the national anthem at the Super Bowl. But and what a nice, humble guy, and he was really good. And that was before, you know, then the rise. Same thing with Florida Georgia Line when I first met them. First song was coming out, two guys that couldn't be nicer, and boom, all of a sudden, you know, you're lucky to get close to them after that. Hey, we have Peter Jay with us. We're talking more. I'm going to ask him about some memorable concerts that have happened in their past as well. It's great to have you on My First Concert here on Talk North www.conchardvetfriends.com. And you can download this, of course, obviously on Apple and Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe. Makes it a lot easier. We've had some great stories through the years. And today is, again, another example of all the stories that I think most of us can relate to. And as these guys have said, just the excitement of going to these concerts, particularly the first time. And I've had more people come up to me and say, I didn't remember my first concert until I started listening to people talk about theirs. And then I started thinking back. You remember who you went with. You probably remember the car you were in. You might remember part of the set list, but it's been a kick. So we'll talk some more here in just a minute. I do want to say thanks to one of our great sponsors, and that's propane.com. And this is really timely because I know we're lowering the carbon footprint. If we're not, we better be, because we're all talking about it. But yet we have to have reliable and affordable energy. And propane.com is a great website to read more about this, because it's really a diverse energy mix, and it's reliable and it's affordable. And that's extremely important, obviously, particularly here in Minnesota, where we have definitely had four distinct seasons this year. But fortunately, we do have a clean energy solution for tomorrow that is available right now as we speak, that's ready to work alongside other energy sources. And frankly, that is propane. 43% fewer emissions in electricity generated from the U.S. grid. That by itself is a powerhouse statement. It's energy stored on site. It's independent from vulnerabilities of the grid. And the benefits don't end there with propane. Major advances are being made today for renewable propane that's compatible with traditional propane, and it requires no additional infrastructure investments. How about that? Here in Minnesota, we need to use all of our low-carbon alternatives, including propane, to safely provide energy, reliability, resiliency, certainly, and affordability, important for all of us. So propane is the right energy right now. But what you need to do is learn more about it. Simply go to propane.com and find out what it can do for you and me, and really for all of us. All right, Jay, let me go back to the concerts that have stood out for you through the years. Anything special?
Peter Gabriel, 1993. It was my wife and I, our first date.
Wow.
We saw him down at Rosemont Horizon in Chicago. We were in about the seventh or eighth row. I got lucky on tickets. Sitting right next to me was Robert Downey Jr. it was crazy. Do you talk about a great... great first impression to keep walking closer and closer to the stage. And then as you're pulling into your row and you kind of slide down, and your wife goes, I think that's Robert Downey Jr. I said, yeah, of course it is. So we want a good seat. But
she stayed with you though.
That's right. That was a great show. I got a chance to see U2, same place, Rosemont Horizon, back in, gosh, what would that, it was the Achtung Baby Tour. So that would have been like 92, 93. That was amazing. But I think as I've gone and gotten older, to me, some of the best shows are the ones, you know, in the smaller, intimate venues. I will tell you, Peter and I saw The War on Drugs last February. And
yeah, I know.
What a rock. I mean, just unbelievable. Just phenomenal.
Okay, let me do a little back. A story on that one. So I'm with Peter and Jay one day, and I said, you got to hear this band. And they had the song out at that time, was Holding On. And I said, they're called War on Drugs. I remember we sat and listened to it. We all should have been working, but we sat and listened to it. And then Jay, you were kind enough to say, hey, they're going to be in town. And I was out of town, and I never got to that show. The only thing I saw was your review when you sent me a note about how spectacular it was.
You know, it was funny. I called Peter and said, you know, and we both knew, because Peter and I talk, you know, every few weeks. And, you know, what are you listening to? What, you know, here's what I'm listening to. And he and I had talked, and he said, you know, have you heard the new War on Drugs? And I said, you know, I just heard the one song. He goes, man, you got to get it. It's unbelievable. And, you know, it's just, you know, here is a band that just, to me, if you like rock and roll, if you like Tom Petty, you like Bruce Springsteen, you like that straightforward rock, great guitar play. I mean, just great musicians. And Peter and I got a chance. We took my wife. You know, it was another one of those moments where you kind of look and, you know, an hour into it, hour and a half into it, you know, my wife's ready to go. Peter and I are just getting warmed up and lathered up, you know. She wore the wrong shoes, so her feet were getting tired. Yeah, and but Peter and I were steadfast. We made it pretty much to the very end, but just, I mean, man, I would go see those guys anywhere, anytime. You know, to me, things like that. I got a chance to see Lord Huron not too long ago. They were terrific. Fleet Foxes. I mean, there's some really good music out there right now. Band of Horses. I'm really psyched about some of the music I've been hearing lately.
Peter, how about you? Anything that stand out? Let's stop bringing up that War on Drugs one that I unfortunately had to miss with you two guys.
Yeah, no, I'm just going to rub that in, Dave, because it was unbelievable. It was you know, metaphorical, spiritual, and it was just, Dave, you really missed out. But that's the beauty of the live event experience, right? Is it replicates when you find the right artist, and it doesn't matter if you're in your teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, and beyond. When you find that niche, that collective experience with people who understand. And that's what was fun, like with going with Jay on that, is like he gets the joke, he understands why we're here, and that's worth something. And so that's part of the fun and the thrill of live events. And then as far as a standout, I think to nod to the marriage, I had been dating my wife for a few months. You know, not at the time, she wasn't my wife, but. There was some drifting, and ended up reconnecting with her at a Damned show that was, if you remember, this little club in downtown Minneapolis called The Rogue or Rogue. It was a short-lived little club, and we were seeing them in a basement setting. And they had what would be considered, I guess, a single at the time, and that was getting a little bit of attention. And we went and saw them, and I look over to my right, and there she is, and she's like looking at the way the lighting is configured on the show, and it's like, okay, dude, this is your last shot. You should go talk to her, and that took off, and that was, you know, is as incredible as anything, because, you know, we go to a lot of shows together, but across the board, Dave, there's so much worth seeing. And I think that's the thing that I always want to get across here is when you're in that room, I don't care if it's U2, if it's Prince, if it's Bruce Springsteen that I was at just Sunday night with my youngest son, you have this moment to enjoy an experience together with a whole bunch of people who understand why we're there. And I think that's what the pandemic took away for a lot of things and a lot of emotional and musical experiences that we're reconnecting with it now. And I have so much more appreciation than I ever did.
100%. 100%.
Is there a band, Jay, that overwhelmed you?
You know, I was just thinking, you know, when you asked the question about concerts that stood out, I'm now remembering my senior year in college was the spring of 1992. And we had one of my roommates had a friend of his who was a music major at the University of Wisconsin. And he lived with us for like a half a semester or whatever. And Thursday night, we were going out. That was a big night in Madison to go out. And I remember Joe saying, I want to stop by the R&R station. It was this little music club right at the Park Street Viaduct, which doesn't even exist anymore. But he said, I just want to go see this band, and then we can go on with our night. So we go down. I don't even know who it was. I don't remember at the time. So we go down, and we're sitting in this little club. And I notice five or six guys next to me, and they're drinking beers and just having some stuff. And we're having some beers, and all of a sudden, the guy from the club gets up and says, all right, want to welcome this group. They're out of Seattle. You're going to hear more and more of these guys. But give it up for Pearl Jam. And, you know, it was these guys just sitting next to us. And the primal sound of the first, you know, 3 minutes, I remember just being kind of thrust back going, what the hell? And watching Eddie Vedder, maybe 15 feet from me, dive in head first into this music and to hear Alive and Even Flow and stuff from that first album, 10. It was just, it like shook me to the core. And it was really the first thing I kind of remember of that whole grunge scene. It was one of those moments where you all of a sudden start to feel your music taste shifting. It's like, okay, maybe this isn't cool anymore. This is what, and you know, to see these guys, I mean, literally, I think they had a white van that they were all poured into, you know, with all the musicians, you know, doing that, you know, that early day, you know, we just need to play in front of people. And they played for about an hour and a half, you know, what was meant to be like a half an hour stop to get a beer, see these guys, turned out to be, holy cow, how do we sign up, join the religion, quit school months before graduation and go on tour with these guys? I mean, I just remember looking at them like, I think my whole life just changed. And so, you know, there's been a few of those kind of moments as I think about music as well, but that one stood out for me. It was like, I'd never, you know, we're listening to, you know, there's Duran Duran, and there was, you know, that whole kind of new wave sound was kind of dying out. And then just that Seattle sound of Nirvana and Alice in Chains and Screaming Trees. And I mean, just, it was crazy.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned Pearl Jam. For folks that may have missed it, if you get an opportunity, a couple of weeks ago, we had Ron Coomer on. Ron played professional baseball, obviously all-star, and was with the Twins, Yankees, Dodgers, and then the Cubs. And now he's a broadcaster of the Cubs. He's a good friend. But Ron, I didn't realize, became good friends with Eddie Vedder, because Eddie Vedder showed up at a Chicago Cubs fantasy camp one time, and not everybody knew who it was. And he said he brings his guitar one night and starts playing. And so Ron and Eddie have become friends. But I brought it up because I remember, and Peter, I don't know if you were involved in this show or not, and I've talked about it a lot on this podcast, so I don't want to beleaguer it, except to say that Pearl Jam opened up for Tom Petty. So my buddy from Chicago comes down for the concert to see Pearl Jam, and he says, boy, I feel sorry for Tom Petty. He isn't going to be able to follow this act. And I said, yeah, let's just wait before we judge. And Petty comes out and just blows the crowd away. But
no, I was just going to say, Dave, I remember that show because everyone had the exact same reaction as like, do you realize what you have to follow? And it's an entirely different energy. And I think that's part of the thrill of those shows is, you know, what everything that Jay just described about Pearl Jam and the Seattle grunge, the energy and the impact. Tom Petty doesn't come at you like a howitzer. He's more of a sniper. And so it's an entirely different experience, just as ethereal and superseding and all that kind of stuff. But that was one of those great moments of like a full wide dynamic. And where it might go wrong, if I may, is Oasis was paired with Black Crowes on a tour. And we were working the show, and you know, and what Brit rock fan doesn't want to get down with Southern fried rock from the Black Crowes, you know?
And two bands with the most dysfunctional brother relationships of all time. It could have been a wrestling match.
That had to be the premise. Is like, do you hate your brother? You're gonna love this show. and I remember watching the crowd and it sold fairly well. And what they would do on tours, they ping pong who's the headliner, right? And and when Oasis, on this particular date, I think Oasis opened for the Crowes, and all of a sudden, you know, the place is full and they're all down in, you know, Morning Glory and Champagne Supernova and all that kind of stuff. And everything's spectacular. When they're done, boom, 50% of the arena. See you, bye. Out the door they go. And there goes the beer sales. And there goes all the things along with it. And then the Crowes came out and, you know, and they did their thing for the rest of their crowd. But I just remember that. It was like, okay, that's sometimes when it doesn't work.
More with Peter and Jay coming up in just a minute. I do want to mention our bank here at Talk North, by the way, is Star Bank. Dependable friend to have. Real people over there. They answer the phone calls. Yeah, in person. No kidding. I know that's something quite novel, isn't it? They make local lending decisions. They're great at what they do. Just wonderful opportunities for you in the business world because they can call an audible in a second. I've talked about that before, how quick they can help you make decisions because those financial decisions sometimes happen like that, as you know. They have 10 locations here in Minnesota, including in the metro. They've served a variety of businesses. They're real good about reinvesting in the communities they serve as well. There's no doubt about that. And great agility to make those quick moving parts in your business decisions. Gosh, they're terrific. Starbank.net. The great thing about them is I think you'll get to know them. They'll know you. You want to do the app. I understand that. That's no sweat. I like using the app as well. It's easy. It's convenient. But when you go, so they have all the technology you want. But you go into the bank, it's kind of a great experience. No, you can always visit those people and get to know their name. As I said, they'll know yours. Starbank.net. They're so good at what they do. Member FDIC and equal housing lender. Jay and Peter, I was going to tell you that going back, and I know we all like pretty much all genres of music going way back and then with the new acts that we have already talked about. So recently, I'm in Florida, and one night there's a concert down here in one of the small halls with the Buckinghams out of Chicago and with the Box Tops. Now, what was interesting, I went because I just like music. I didn't know really what to expect, obviously, because they're all gosh, older than I am. I don't know how active they were, but went to see them, and they were both very good. I got to say this about the Box Tops. They had a song out called The Letter that I think Billboard still may have in their top 500 songs of all time, which is a great song. But what I didn't know, and this is what I love about these small venues that you talked about a little bit, Bill Cunningham and Gary Talley are original members. They're still with the band, and they're from Memphis. And so they grew up with Booker T and the MGs in their class, Bill Cunningham. So they played together, you know, were buddies since they were kids. And they played with Sam and Dave. There's a great story about Procol Harum and Whiter Shade of Pale, how that was their song, and Procol Harum released it 1 week before the Box Tops did. It's an interesting story, great story. But all these backstories, they played with Freda Payne, who I love. They played with Willie Nelson and Tammy Wynette individually as guitarists. And then Bill Cunningham of the band, one of the founders, then left rock and roll, quit the band, and started doing classical music and played with Itzhak Perlman, for Pete's sake. So, and then he played with Isaac Hayes. And these are stories that in a small venue, these bands, and Peter, you know that, they can sit and do some of this, the background. And to me, that's just absolutely, I was just fast. I walked out of there going, holy smokes, I'm a Box Tops fan.
That's it, but isn't that fascinating? And you know, inspiring, because once you start, and that's one of the things, I guess, that's never not fascinating to me about the music and the creation and the artistry, is there is so much oddities and complications and incredible collaborations that happen all behind these scenes, all off stage, all on stage. And you start understanding that, it's like, that's how we got to here. This gets to there because we did this over here and we had that relationship, and in an industry not always kept afloat by honesty and integrity, Dave, it's amazing to watch how these guys glean things from each other, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really fun. So, Jay, let me go back to you before I let you and Peter go. Any final thoughts on your concert days, which certainly aren't over? I know you've been going to some more as well.
Well, Peter mentioned the fact that, you know, what the two, three years the pandemic robbed us of. And, you know, this fall I become an empty nester, and my wife and I have already been kind of practicing our ability on Tuesday or Wednesday nights to go do something. And to know what a great music city this is. It's one of the things I absolutely love about the Twin Cities, you know, the opportunity to go see more and more of these types of shows, whether they're, you know, at the Fine Line or at First Avenue or or over in St. Paul at the Palace and things like that. I just think there's, or the Armory. I mean, my God, we are lucky, so lucky to be in a spot where artists want to play, where the audience is embracing of all different kinds of music. I mean, when you go to some of these shows, you don't just see one click anymore. You know, you can see people from all different, different walks of life. And, you know, just in this kind of weird time we live in, you know, just I'm hoping that we can all get back to these venues inside, outside, and just start to come together more with the great music. I just think it's as things open up more and more, I can't wait for this summer to come and to be with Peter and you, Dave, and to see more of these bands and experience, because it's not just the music, it's also the experience with friends. And it's just amazing what music does for us and, quite frankly, humanity.
Yeah, it just makes you feel good. Peter, any final thoughts?
I just want to echo what Jay said, and I think that's one of the beautiful things. And that's in the Twin Cities, in particular, the venues. We have really amazing venues in the Twin Cities, and we have really dedicated individuals on creating those experiences and discovering bands and building this rapport, building back this rapport with an audience. When we were doing marketing and booking and all that kind of stuff for the various shows and festivals over the years, Minneapolis, St. Paul was always what they called a reaction market. You would always be able to have it as an early adopter. It was always a place for an immediate affection between the artist and in the crowd. And so I can't wait to get back on a regular schedule of shows. And it's fun, like Jay said, it's really important. I don't care what your age is. It's really important to go with people that understand and then meet people that also have that passion for shared experience. And so, yeah, bring them on. Let's, I've got a debit card. I can wreck that on a few shows.
And feel good about it.
Yeah, why am I going to apologize for that?
Peter, Jay, great talking to you as always. Thanks for joining us here.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
We're back next week again with another episode of My First Concert. A thanks to Brandon Morton, our producer here with us. A thanks to YouCare for bringing you this show, making it all possible. Aquarius Home Services, broadcasting from the Aquarius Home Services studio. Go to their website at aquariushomeservices.com. Also, starbank.net, our bank here at Talk North, and the Propane Association. That's simple. Go to propanemn.com and learn a lot more. It's great being with you again today on My First Concert. Download us on Apple, Spotify, subscribe as well, or go to Talk North. Want more information? And we'll see you again next week.